The reason why a lot of us haven't learned color the way that we want to is because, I'm sorry, manufacturers, you don't make it easy.
Hi, I'm Neil Malik.
Hey, I'm Jenny Strebe.
Steve Sleeper from the Professional Beauty Association.
Hi, I'm Philip Wolf, and you're listening to the Hair Game Podcast.
Hey, listener, I'm Eric Taylor. Thanks for tuning in to the Hair Game Podcast. In news, cases are rising, COVID cases are rising just about everywhere, but something that the media continues to leave out is the fact that deaths continue to either be stable or fall. In California and LA County, which is the largest county, I believe, in the country, deaths continue to fall, even though we are getting increases in cases. So that is really good news. I'm told that this is a result of the better therapeutics that our doctors have discovered in the last several months. Remdesivir is a very effective drug that some of the more severe cases get, and anti-inflammatory steroids are being given to people. Instead of intubating people, they're reducing lung inflammation by using steroids, and this seems to be helping people recover. So all of that is fantastic news. We don't want to see new cases, of course, but at least we're getting the very, very good news that the thing is not as fatal as we once thought that it was. So hopefully the politicians keep their heads cool and allow us to continue to choose to live the lives we want safely out there. Podloot giveaway time. $150 Apple gift card just in time for the holidays. The winner is Cosmo Alice. DM me Cosmo Alice at the Hair Game Podcast Instagram with your mailing address, and I'm going to send you, your email address, and I will send you the $150 Apple gift card. At the end of the show, I'll tell you what we will give away next week and how you can win that. Now we continue with the conversation with Lisa Walker, Lisa Loves Balayage. In the previous episode, she just finished telling her story about how she got into education. Now we start with how she evolved that into Balayage Bootcamp. Lot of great things in this episode. Enjoy. Okay, so are we working towards Balayage Bootcamp? Is that what you've, because that's
okay,
what you're
so
doing
it's
now.
Funny. It's funny because, I did the two people class. There was no name for the class at the time. And then the four, and then the six, and then eight. And then people from other states started asking me to come to their salons. And then I really got panicked because I don't like to fly.
Okay, pause. So had you started Instagram?
Yes, I had started Instagram at this time. I probably had less than 2,000 followers.
Okay, so the same account you have now, Lisa Loves Balayage. And yeah. So you had a couple thousand followers. So the education started snowballing, and you think that was because of the positive word of mouth, is what I'm getting.
I do.
Okay, so it starts snowballing.
I think it's my style of teaching, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I didn't even know I was a teacher. So it's funny. So what happened was I called up a friend. His name's Anthony. If you listen to Anthony, love you. And I called him up, and he's like, he knows a little bit about everything, right? So he knows he's great at doing hair, but he also knows a little bit about computer stuff and more. So I called him up, and I'm like, hey, can you help me build a website? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, yes, you do. You know how to do this. I'm like, please, please. He said, all right, let me see. So we're on the phone for the next 3 or 4 hours, like that night, and next thing I know, we built a website. And I told Anthony, Anthony is single and he doesn't have kids. And I said, you should travel with me. He's like, what? I was like, yeah, we can do this together. So we put out feelers and asked for host salons. We only did classes in salons at the time. And within 2 weeks, we were booked for the rest of the year.
Oh my gosh.
But we're also learning. So we didn't do it probably the best way we could in the beginning. So we would do something like this. We would book a class in Portland on Sunday, and our next class would be in Washington State on Monday.
Oh God. Okay.
Yeah. So we had to we weren't that smart about it at first.
Yeah.
So we would have to we'd fly out on Saturday, we'd meet in Portland, on Saturday. We'd set up at the salon. We'd do the class on Sunday. We'd leave there immediately, return the car, get another flight, be in Washington. So it was very exhausting.
Right.
And we did that for like a year or two. I can't remember. And it was just, and then we added an assistant, and then we had another one. So it was like about four of us. And we put a cap on the classes because you can only have so many people when there's only so many people.
Yeah.
So
and how much are you charging for the classes, and what's your cap on the classes at that time?
Okay, well, so I think it was 20 or 25, and they might have been about $450 or $500 for a hands-on class. It included like a swag bag and a mannequin head and the printouts and the lightener. You need everything you needed.
Yeah.
So it was like all inclusive. So. I might have been $475 now that I think about it, and that was for a one-day hands-on class. But it didn't include what it includes now. And then, so another friend of mine, Justice Cottrell, he said, "Lisa, have you ever thought about offering a demo only to your class? Like, you could only buy the hands-on class at the time. You couldn't just do just the demo and leave. You had to do the whole thing." And so his class, and he hosted me, and he had a huge salon. And he was the first class that we actually decided to try that. So we had like a two ticket tiers. You could do just the morning or you could do all day. And what we realized from that is you can do as many people as you want in the demo only, because you're not really providing lunch for them. You're not providing products and mannequin heads. It's just you sign up for the morning, and I think that might have been about $250 or $275. Mm-hmm. The only hard part about that was you had to have your model done before lunch was over so they could see the end result. Mm-hmm. And so you had to, like, it was, that part was a little difficult because you had to factor in processing time and stuff like that. So now we have two parts of class. You can do demo only or hands-on. And we did that for like about a year and a half or 2 years. And then the next year, the girl that was traveling with me, who was the assistant, her kids were getting ready to go into school. So it was going to be a little more difficult for her to travel. And then Anthony was becoming higher up in a brand that he worked for, so he was going to do less traveling with me too. So honestly, again, here I am, I'm just going to quit. And that's what I decided. And that's when I called Victor and I told him, I said, I think Balayage Bootcamp is over. And he's like, why? I said, because, again, I'm like, you know, Jamie, you know, that's my girlfriend's name, Jamie can't travel that much anymore, and you know, I don't really have anybody to travel with, and I don't know how to do the website myself, and I don't know how to make the flyers, you know, because I was dependent on people.
Right.
And he's like, you don't quit, you go bigger. I said, bigger how? He's like, do audio, do visuals, get hotel space. And I'm thinking, in my mind, all I see is dollar signs, dollar signs, dollar signs, dollar signs, right? And I'm like, okay, and what if it doesn't work? And he goes, well, what if it does? Like, I don't look at it like from that.
Sure.
I wasn't looking at it like that time. I said, and then who's going to do all this audio and visual you're talking about? Like, he's like, I'll do it. I'm like, if you do it, then we can do this. And so he found a hotel space in Miami. This was our first time doing like a bigger class.
Yep.
Okay, so let me back up a little bit prior to that, though. He did, when I came to California, he did travel with me from one location because I want him to see how it runs.
Yep.
So we did a class, I think it was in San Diego, and he was there for that. And then from there, we went to Stockton and did a class at a friend of his salon. So, and they all traveled with me. We all got on the flight because I said, I want you to at least see how everything goes and see what you can do. And so they kind of saw how exhausting that was too. So now we decided to do our class. We extend the class, expand the curriculum, but 2 days in the same location.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're becoming smarter, but there was two different classes offered at the time. There was Balayage Bootcamp and Balayage Bootcamp 2.0, okay, which was still difficult because you're doing like this all-day hands-on class day one and an all-day hands-on class day two. And it was just super exhausting. So then we broke it up now where it's a two-day class. And there's, you can do day one only. You can do day one and day two in the morning. And you can do day one and all day, day two. The only thing you can't do by itself now is the hands-on. The hands-on is an all-inclusive, because you want to know what you're doing.
Right.
So now we have all these different buying options. And then, so that's how we grew and expanded the curriculum. And now we offer, I just did my first virtual class, because we've incorporated color theory now. We bring in guest artists now. It's not just, when I first did it, it was strictly a balayage class. You're going to learn how to open air paint. Now we teach color melting, we teach foiling, we teach 3D balayage, 30-minute foiling. We still teach balayage. I usually bring in a guest artist for that, though. We teach color theory. It's so much more now.
That's amazing. Okay, so pre-COVID, let's call it February. Had you booked a bunch of classes out for the year?
Okay, so we did our last class in March, to be honest with you.
Okay.
March 5th.
Yeah.
And it was in New Jersey, and it was actually like, when we were leaving there, people were actually starting to do shutdowns. Like,
that was pretty early.
I had to Google what COVID or coronavirus was. I'm so busy. I don't keep up with like that.
Yeah.
And so that first week I went back. So this is the 5th. And then the next week I'm at the salon and I'm hearing all this chatter about this coronavirus. Mm-hmm. So now I'm starting to get a little bit nervous. And my next class coming up was in Austin, Texas. And it was a collaboration class with Johnny Ramirez. And we had sold a boatload of tickets for this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our flights were booked. And up until the very last week is when we backed out.
Yeah.
Right? We're like, well, let's just postpone because we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And there goes my April class. And then my May class was in Michigan. That's gone. And then my June class was, I can't remember where June was. And then July class was San Francisco. And then October was in California. It's just like the world is crumbling around me.
Right. 'Cause
this is my... What people understand is that this is my main source of income. I work beyond the chair only 2 days a week, and this is what I put all my money, all my time, and all my effort into. Mm-hmm. And everything that I can't, that I need to do, I can't do. So now people are not flying. Hotels are not open. Yeah. You can't be in gatherings over 100. And those are all the things I need to happen in order for me to be in a successful business.
Right.
So I think I felt every different emotion during COVID, and I told people that. Like, it was like being on my constant period. Like, I'm like, one day I'm sad, and the next day I'm scared, and the next day I'm frustrated, and the next day I'm mad, and the next day I'm like, oh, I can probably do this for another month, and the next day I'm like, I'm over this, so.
Yeah, very common, very common. So you said that you did your first virtual. Tell us about that. Is that something that you're going to start doing more now?
No, I'll do one more.
Okay.
I'll never stop doing in-person classes because I thrive off of the energy that the crowd brings me, whether it's 5 people or 500 people. I live for that now. Mm-hmm. Here's a person who didn't want to get up in front of one person. Mm-hmm. But I really like the whole in-person experience, so I'll never stop doing that. But I was getting into like, I was getting into a funk. So I'm like, Victor, please. I was like, let's do a virtual. He doesn't love the whole virtual either. I said, let's just do just color theory because there's no hands-on. Let's just do just color theory. I said, I just need to teach again because that's what I'm passionate about. And I'm getting rusty and I just want to teach. But I had no idea how difficult a virtual class is because you don't have that audience, that interaction, that question and answer. And we did the best we could. We let people come in on the and it was side by side, like the news, like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm on the screen and she's asking, but it just wasn't the same. So right. No, I won't be doing that.
Right.
I have one more planned, which is a placement class, but I still feel that you will learn so much more at an in-person class because there's more questions being asked. There's more artists demoing. You meet new people and you make new friends and.
Yeah.
I know people on Instagram right now that I know became friends in these classes. I see them to this day. I know one of the people that works for Victor, and he works for me now, too. His first interaction with us was at a class. He bought a ticket like everybody else, mm-hmm. and now he works with me, and he works with Victor.
Yeah, the network. I mean, we have entire episodes dedicated to the value of a network, and those are the things that happen in person, of course. So you haven't planned any, what would you call it, like homecoming classes, you know, return to in-person classes yet, have you? It's too early, isn't it?
I'm ready.
And I know you're ready, but I mean...
Okay, I'm not... Okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to do in-person classes, Eric. I'm going to just make them smaller, and I might go back to salons at first.
Okay.
But by this time next year, we'll 100% be back in... doing like hotels and
audio,
as long as if everything permits. But this was just a break for us for sure. It's just a break,
right? An annoying break, but a temporary one.
So I think like my plan for 2021 would be my first class. I really want to do Austin first because that was the class that really I felt like was the most disappointing because although I won't be able to have Johnny Ramirez with me this one, there was a lot of people, you know, that had signed up for that class, and it was so close.
Yeah.
And we had to cancel. And I told them, I said, you know what? But I promise you guys that we'll make you the first class of 2021, and we'll bring on new artists, you know, that will and a ton of value.
Yeah.
So that would, but if we can be in hotels, that would be the first one. But if we can't, we're definitely going to find salons that are willing to host us. We'll take all the necessary precautions. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. That's
okay.
What we'll do.
Okay. That's a good idea. And hopefully sooner rather than later. All right. So since you're yearning to be an educator, you see a lot of hair on Instagram. You've seen a lot of colorists come to your classes. What for those who are struggling to get the quality of results that you get, what are the common mistakes that they're making?
Timing. I'd say that's number one. And that's why I put it out there. A lot of people are trying to create the results that you see out on Instagram in 2-3 hours, and you just won't get them in that time. So the first thing is timing. Like, whatever amount of time you think you need, you need double that. That's my rule of thumb to people. When you're starting out creating transformations or, you know, dark to light or something that's really, oh my God, if you think it's going to take you 2, it's going to take you 4. So I think timing is number one. And, you know, I do want to mention this really quick, Eric, because I talk about this too, is that my desire to educate doesn't stop with a paid class. And I tell people all the time, you never have to spend a dime. And you're still going to learn from me because I dedicate myself to that. So every Friday in my stories is ask me a question. On my page, I'm gonna explain everything that I've done.
Your feed is so chock full of education. I'm just telling everybody listening, your feed is, I mean, I've spent, you know, before we got on Skype here, I spent probably an hour just reading all the captions on your feed. Because you do boil things down to a very simple way. And I'm not a hairdresser, but I of course have picked up a lot of things in 20 years. And I find it really fascinating just to read your captions.
Yeah, so I want people to know that it's, learning is not all for profit. It's just to help anybody in any way possible. Because I told my husband, you know, when I'm dead and gone, the last thing I want people to say about me is that she was good at balayage. Like, I want someone to say, like, no, I actually understood this, or I learned that, or I became this or became that because of it. So I do want to mention that. But as far as results, I think timing is number one.
Hold on. Relating to timing, I imagine that there is a tremendous tug of war between the client wanting something fast and the reality of the timing. And so what do you suggest to the hairdresser who's trying to balance the expectations of the client with the reality of actually getting a good service?
I disagree with that. I think I always say this. I say it's not, people blame the clients all the time. The clients are not the ones that are educated in how long the things are going to take. This is exactly what I say to a client that is shocked at this, okay? They come to me. This is a very common one, so I'll just use this one. And their hair is, for lack of a better word, brassy. Their hair is naturally dark, and it's brassy. And they want to be these light, bright blondes that they see all over Instagram. And I say, okay, I definitely think that's possible. My question to you is, what is the amount of time that you have normally spent in the salon? And they're like, what do you mean? I said, a typical appointment for you takes how long? They said, 2 or 3 hours. I said, okay, perfect. And I can give you the exact same thing you have in that amount of time. If you need me to take it a step further, I'm going to need double the time. So I'm looking at 5 to 6 hours. The reason your hair looks the way that it does now is for that reason. I can only give you that in 2 to 3 hours. I can't get you any lighter than that because it takes more time. So I always say it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So the client's never sat for that long, and that's the reason her hair looks like that.
Right. So create the expectations properly in the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other things?
Well, I don't over-educate the client either because I think that people think it's the same as trying to learn color theory. Like, talk to me like a regular person and I get it. Quit talking to clients like they're stylists. Learn to speak like a client. A client has no freaking idea what 7RR is. So why are you asking the client, oh, so you want to be 7RR? She's like, what is 7RR? So you have to really, like, it's really simple. But I think it's people make things what I've seen is one of the hands-on biggest mistakes is people overcomplicate everything. They overcomplicate the consultation. They overcomplicate the formula. They overcomplicate the technique. They overcomplicate the price. Everything's just so complicated. Where everywhere else you go, it's very simple. You go to a restaurant. You know what to expect. You know what it's going to cost. There's like, with hair though, it's so different. Everything's going to be so complicated. So I just simplify everything. I'm saying, you know, okay, so I'm looking at about 5 hours. I said, I tell them this too. I say, a lot of the timing is going to be mostly taking things slowly because we have to keep your hair, the integrity of your hair as well. And that takes time also. But I don't go through explaining like science and chemistry and color theory to clients. So I'd say simplify it.
Okay. What are some of your favorite hairdresser business tips these days?
All right. Well, first of all, it's funny that you bring up the word business because most stylists don't know the first thing about business. And that's a problem. And what I mean by that is just because you are the busiest person in the salon does not mean that you should open up a salon, because that doesn't mean you know the first thing about business. So, okay, the one thing that I will give you, and it's mine's kind of broad too, is I keep using the word business because this is not a friendship. This is not like we're friends, so I'm not going to charge you. This is not like we're friends, so you can call me on a Sunday night and tell what you want. If you are running your business like a business, pre-COVID, post-COVID, during COVID, you will still continue to be a prosperous business because you have boundaries and you know how to execute when you need to increase prices or cut back in certain places. So that's going to be a tip of mine, is you have to keep your emotions completely disconnected from that.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. What do you, have you advised anyone on whether they should raise prices recently? Because of, some people call them a COVID surcharge because of PPE. Things are more expensive. They can't double book, et cetera.
Nope, I haven't talked about that at all, but this is what I do think. And I warned people of this. Everybody was so, oh my God, we're going to be so busy when we get back from quarantine. And I'm telling all my clients to wait for me. And what would you do if a client went somewhere else? Or what would you do if a client colored the hair? Okay, first of all, you're not going to gain all of your clients back. I'm telling you that now. For a lot of us are going to lose clients because of this, because some clients will be scared to come back. Some clients will decide that the time and the investment aren't worth it. Some clients will find somebody else. This will be their opportunity to, you know what, I was on the fence about her anyway, so I'm going to find somewhere else to go. So I felt that this was a perfect opportunity for a lot of people to restructure their business. Now is the time to find new clients. And if you find new clients, you're not raising your prices. They don't know your price, so that's not raising your price. A new client that walks in the door, her haircut's $75. My old clients are $50. That's not a price increase. That's the new price for new clients. Victor may have talked about this on his podcast. I learned it from him. So I said, this is a perfect opportunity for you guys that have been so overbooked for so long and can't raise your prices to now fill in the gaps with new clients at new prices and new techniques and restructure the business that you've always wanted that you keep saying you can't have.
Yeah.
So that's
I love what you said at the beginning of the podcast when you said that you needed to spend less time worrying about keeping old clients and more time worrying about getting the new ones coming in. So let's talk about getting the new ones coming in. Has anything changed in regards to marketing yourself for clients these days?
I'm old fashioned. I've been doing hair over 23 years. I still think word of mouth is always going to be the best. I don't think Instagram should be your sole outlet for building your clientele base. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good free platform for advertising, but I always think that the old school ways are going to be really great. I heard this, I can't remember who told me this, so whoever you are, it was a great idea, and I wish I could give them the credit, because what they said that they would do for the referral program that they did is, it's people don't like to coupon or discount, right? So Groupon looks bad, discounts look bad. So what they do is they give their client a gift certificate in X amount of dollars and say, give these to your friends. So yes, they're you're not going to get anything for them. But if you write out a $100 gift certificate or gift card and you tell your client, give these out to your friends, and when I get two of them back, you'll get a free service. Mm-hmm. Essentially, when you get those clients are coming in for free, but you're ultimately gaining new clients by doing that. So I thought that was kind of genius, because not only is the friend giving their friend a gift? So that doesn't look cheap or like promoting.
Yeah, yeah.
Now they're going to get something. Everybody gets something from that. Everybody.
I love
it.
So
now you might have two potential new clients. They feel great because, oh, my friend gave me this gift card, so I wanted to try you out. I'm more like, if someone gives me a $100 gift card for a service, I'm more likely to use it than I'm not.
100%. It feels valuable versus it feels cheap, right? Like a discount. Discount feels cheap. Groupon feels cheap. But a gift card like that, which is in effect a discount, feels very valuable. I love that idea.
I mean, even if you have someone that does your massage for you, right? You love your girl. But if someone gives you a gift certificate for a 90-minute massage somewhere else, you'll use it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, and if I don't like it, I'll just go back. But there's no harm in using it.
Totally. I love that. All right, let's talk about the gram. So you've got a great account. Have you changed anything about the way that you're engaging on your Instagram?
I've slowed down quite a bit. I have a love-hate relationship with Instagram. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I haven't been posting as much as I used to. I utilize my stories a little bit more now. But I feel like because of, with COVID, I feel like a lot of things change for a lot of people. And I'll be honest with you, during that time, especially on the days where I was very emotional, I had no desire to look at anybody's hair pictures. Like, are you stupid? Do you see what's going on right now? Nobody cares about that hair picture. I was like almost offended. But at the same time, I got to be like, just because I feel that way doesn't mean that other people feel that way. But I think that people realize during that time that life is very fragile and there's so much more important things. And I just feel like whatever you put out needs to be more valuable now than ever before.
Hmm. Have you embarked into TikTok?
No, but I should.
I don't want to make you feel anxious by asking that question.
No. What I hate about TikTok is this. It ruins my life because the minute I open that app up, and by the time I close it, I just feel like, oh my God, I just lost 3 hours of my life and I'm never going to get back.
Totally. I'm the same.
God. So even my husband, I'm like, are you TikToking? Because I know it's like, I can't like, oh God, but I should do TikTok.
Yeah.
But if I did TikTok, I would not carry over the same content. I would totally be like ridiculous, funny, silly me.
Because that's the kind of content on TikTok for the most part.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I would totally go with the flow there.
Right. All right. So we talked about your homeschooling endeavors, which is, I know, extremely frustrating. How do you, and maybe we'll talk about, notwithstanding COVID, okay, we're going to talk about a normal type of routine pre-COVID. Your kid existed pre-COVID. How did you balance your extremely busy schedule, especially with the traveling and everything, with trying to be a mom and a wife?
Okay. I love that question. And I don't try to balance. I don't. Because this is what I think happens when you try to balance. When you try to be the best wife, the best mom, the best stylist, somebody is going to get the short end of that stick because you can't be the best at everything. I think that you should prioritize. Something that my dad taught me is, Lisa, being a parent is not about every little small detail. It's about creating memories. And so when he said that, I thought about my own childhood and the memories that I have. And I don't remember all this minute things. I don't remember what I had for dinner on Thursdays. I don't remember which one of my parents taught me to tie my shoe. I don't remember those things. I remember very important things. I remember when we went to Cedar Point, which is an amusement park. I remember when we took camping trips in the summertime. I remember those things. And so for my son, it's not about quantity of time. It's about the quality of time. My son at his age has already been on a plane more times than I had by the time I was 20. He's been to Disneyland. He's been to Disney World. He's been to the Mall of America. So I tried to create these memories for him that stick with him, because women have too much mom guilt. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't have guilt, and this is why. Because although my husband is important, although my son is important, although my work is important, I feel that I'm also important. Mm-hmm. So if I give all of that to everybody else, Lisa won't have time to get her nails done. Lisa won't have time to go shopping if she wants to. Lisa won't have time to go shopping with her girlfriends if she wants to. Lisa won't have time for anything, and then you'll become resentful. Mm-hmm. So instead of balancing, try to prioritize, and what comes with that is called sacrifice. So something in your life is going to have to be sacrificed. Mm-hmm. For me, it's mostly my household chores. I don't have the most spotless home, and every piece of laundry is not done, and I'm okay with that, because would I rather let the laundry go for another day and sit down and watch a movie with my son? Yes. Mm-hmm. I will go to bed at night okay with myself. And because I'm a little bit like everyone else, like I want things to be done the way I want them done right now. Mm-hmm. But learn to prioritize, and I think that is a better alternative to trying to balance.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. You talked earlier about taking responsibility, which is, I think, one of the fundamental bases of actually having a happy and successful life. What would you suggest to those who don't tend to take responsibility for things, and maybe so much so that they maybe don't even realize that they don't take responsibility for things? Talk to that person and try to convince them to do it.
I don't have to convince them. They'll figure it out, because good luck to them, because you won't get very far. Like, you'll finally come to a place where you'll realize, like, it's even, okay, let's talk about relationships. If every relationship you have ends badly, stop blaming, oh, I picked the wrong guys. No, you probably have something to do with that too. Like I always say, in friendships, in relationships, in business, you always have to take a look at what role did you play in that situation. Because it's just like, my clients actually probably don't like talking to me, because when they tell me things, it's always coming from their perspective. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's another perspective for even with myself. Like if I was to say something about my husband, right? Well, he came home and he did A, B, and C, and I could make all my girlfriends think, oh my God, that's so horrible. He could go to work and say, you know, I came home from work. I worked all day. I come home and immediately my wife starts, you know, bitching and complaining. Now that's his perspective. Now who looks like the bad person, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I say always just take responsibility for whatever role you play, because you won't figure it out until you do. Mm-hmm. Somebody said the other day, because I said that on my Instagram, take responsibility for yourself. They said, well, whose fault is it if you fried somebody's hair off and it's because the stylist before them did something? I said, it's still your fault. Like, it's never not your fault. And you can't say, well, if she, okay, well then, well, what if the client would have told you? Well, that's the thing. If a doctor gives you the wrong prescription, whose fault is that? Is it your fault for not telling that you were allergic to that? Or is it his fault for not checking the chart? Like, eventually the blame has to fall somewhere and on someone. And if you keep placing that blame on somebody else, you won't really get very far.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, we only have control over ourselves. So constantly throwing the blame out there does not help us change things and make things better going forward.
100%.
I want to go back to COVID for a second. Such a unique time. We did a lot of episodes about COVID at every different stage of the process. And frankly, within the United States and within the world, different people are in different stages of the process. And within the stages of you know, salon closure and different rules changing, et cetera, our listeners are in different areas, different geographies that have different things. However, now that we're kind of getting, we're definitely through the beginning of it. We're probably through the middle of it. We've learned a lot about this kind of thing. Let's kind of look back. And I'm curious about what some of the more interesting perspectives that you've had about it are.
Okay, so the biggest thing that was in debate when it first started was rent.
Salon
rent.
Should
I pay my rent? Salon rent. Rent. My opinion is when you become a renter within any facility, right, you become... Because this is what I don't like. You can't have it both ways. People that rent suites or own suites or rent, They do it because they want to be their own boss. They want freedom. They want to make their own hours. They want to control their business, which makes them essentially an owner to that business, that suite, that chair. But when it came time to pay rent, now they wanted all that to fall on the other owner, right? Well, I don't own the building. I just own, okay, so, but you're still responsible for that area, okay? So I think it really brought up the fact that a lot of styles just weren't prepared for something like this. Like, a lot of, you know, as far as like saving money, I think that's really important. I talked about that a lot during COVID about saving money. And I don't really share a lot of my personal stuff, but they were asking me how I felt about it. And I actually told them, well, you guys, I paid my rent for the whole year in January. So I'm already paid, right? If my owner is generous enough to return some of that money to me, that'd be great. But I'm already paid up. And a lot of people are like, well, I can't do that. I said, no, you can do that. It's just the way that you have to learn to do it. I said, I couldn't do that the first year. The first year I just did month to month. Then the next year I went month and a half. Then the next, because I'm going on 6 years now, right? So every year, it's like paying your car insurance. You can't learn to pay 6 months at a time until you learn to pay for 6 months worth of insurance all at once. So it's a buildup. But the way I felt about it is, it happened to everybody, so it was a bigger issue. But I had to ask the question to a lot of stylists, if you had broke your ankle unexpectedly, if you hurt your wrist, if you had shoulders, if you did anything unexpected to yourself that was beyond your control, should you not be responsible for that same rent that you committed to? Like, it should not fall on somebody that owns the building to forgive you for something that they're not in control of either. They didn't make you break your leg or hurt your wrist or have shoulder surgery. So you could have been out for the same 6 or 7 weeks. Now, I will say this. I did change my perspective, especially in California, when things got past 3 months. I'm like, this is getting excessive now. Yeah. Because now you're talking about, and I'm pretty sure the people that own the buildings weren't paying the rent to those people that own those buildings. So I'm sure it was a ripple effect.
You're looking but at it.
Yeah. So in the first couple of weeks, I was adamant that you guys, you need to pay your rent. You need to pay your rent. You need to pay your rent. As time progressed, I started to change my opinion and say, you know, maybe you can work something out with your owner that works for both of you. Like, maybe they can add up those payments and divide them over some time. But I don't think that you're not responsible for it, because I always say big risk, big reward. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you want to be the owner or the boss, you get to make all the profit, but you also have to take all the loss when something happens too. And my husband had me listen to this thing one time about this guy who was ranting about how he deserved more money for working in a pencil factory, right? And he was smart. He had all his ducks in a row, and he talked about all the reasons why. And then the owner came in and said, okay, now that you've said all that, now what happens if I file for bankruptcy? Who takes on that risk? If the machines go down, who replaces that? If this happens, who takes this risk? You get to walk away scot-free, and I still incur all this risk. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really want sales to understand, is that just because you have your own suite or your own booth doesn't mean that you don't incur some of the risk.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, we went from taking responsibility to into that explanation. And look, you're looking at the guy who, you know, we have 2,500 independent beauty professionals in 20 locations, and we abated everyone's rent. However, I totally agree with what you're saying. And this has been one of the hardest things about this. And it's not just in the salon industry, it's across the landscape of our economy, where you have these kind of payment waterfalls where everyone wants to point the finger at everybody else, but no one is really responsible. I'm doing air quotes. No one is really responsible. Nobody certainly wants to be the one that gets caught holding the bag. But I appreciate that perspective a tremendous amount, and it has to go with that fundamental element of taking responsibility as, you know, being a way to go about your life that is going to ultimately help you.
Well, I guess my bigger issue with that is that people wanted to not pay their rent, and I'm saying to myself, okay, if all the people don't pay their rent, you may not have a place to go back to when it's time.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, after the first shutdown, people were saying that probably 30% of salons were going to close forever, because their landlords were making them pay the rent, as all landlords were. And the salon owners either realized they didn't want to take on that risk, that responsibility, or they didn't have enough money, or, you know, any of the other reasons. We got shut down again for almost 2 months, and that percentage may be higher. So this is the reality of the situation. And of course, a lot of people that work in these salons that got shut down forever are just, they're just going to go to a different salon. You know, hopefully they understand, you know, the difficulty that is caused kind of across this entire payment waterfall.
I hope, because I do see now some of the effects that it's had. You know, some people, they don't want to go back in the salon. They like doing the house calls. They get to keep all the money. They don't have to pay the rent. But I think it will, over time, cheapen our industry.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, this is what the Professional Beauty Association, the Professional Beauty Federation of California, you know, our other advocates, this is what they try to bolster within the industry, is the professionalism of the industry, which is, you know, first and foremost, operating within the standards that are put out there from a safety standpoint, right? And I mean, that's handled by the state. They do the establishment licenses and the, of course, cosmetology licenses. And so operating outside of that system, by definition, is falling below a professional standard. And I think most people don't want that to happen. But you know, we're going to see what happens, you know, in the medium term. In the short term, there are definitely some people who are thinking, well, I just want to do house calls. I've heard from a lot of people who have already done that now for a few months and are coming back to the salon because they're like, well, I can't make enough money doing just house calls because it takes me so long to drive from one house to the next and et cetera, et cetera. And it makes it really, really hard for me to do the service, you know, in a professional way. But time will tell.
Yeah, I just think that when going to the salon, this is what I tell people, that people come to the salon because of the experience. If you don't offer that experience, then you take away a lot of the value in that. So, you know, maybe a mother likes to come after she gets off work and it's like a little outlet for her and she can relax and she can read a magazine and she gets pampered for that hour and a half, where when you do it at her house, now the kids are there and the cast is going on and yeah, she still gets her beautiful color, but it's just not the same experience. And the thing about a salon, and I tell people this all the time, is, and I'm speaking to booth runners when I say this, and salon owners, any salon should be equipped with anything that could walk through the door. I see a lot of people that buy as needed. Like, you know, they talk to the client and what are you getting? But what if something doesn't go right and you have to fix that? Do you have what you need? So that's another thing too, is like when you're working like that, how are you going to know what you need? Or what if something happens? How are you going to fix that? So being inside of a salon, I think that you're fully equipped with an arsenal to handle anything that could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's like if you're getting a surgery, you want to be in the hospital when that happens just in case something goes wrong.
Absolutely. If you could wave a wand and change anything about the industry, and I'm going to call COVID off limits. So non-COVID related, if you could wave a wand and change anything about the industry at all, what would it be?
Higher education. Some states are reducing the amount of hours that they need to become a stylist. So, and some states, see, Michigan doesn't have it. They have what they call continuing education credits, and we don't have that either. So like a doctor, in order for them to stay licensed and in practice, they have to take so many hours of continued education a year. So I think that should be required across the board. It doesn't have to be an expensive class or something that you pay for, but there should be some type of requirement for people to advance there. And I'm saying this because I didn't realize it for so long. And when I look at other countries, hairdressing is very prestigious in comparison to here. It's a four-year apprenticeship. They take it very seriously. They get into the whole chemistry and the science, and it's an art form. Where here, it's like you go to school for 10 months and boom, you got a license, you can do hair. There's no prestige placed upon it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like because of that, stylists themselves don't elevate themselves in that way, because people, I use a lot of doctor references when I'm talking about things. Like, I'll talk about having an assistant, and like, when you go to the doctor doesn't greet you first, the nurse does. So the same experience that you get at the doctor's, you get at the salon. You come and you're greeted by a receptionist, and then you're greeted by my nurse, which is my assistant, and then I, the doctor, come in and take care of the problem. So people are like, but you're not a doctor. I said, no, I'm not. But if you don't think of yourself in that way, you can't elevate yourself to that level. So that's what I compare myself to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love it. At the end of every episode, I ask for a hair horror story.
People ask me that. And the one that sticks out in my head the most.
Wait,
the most.
Wait. Who else asks you that? I thought like I was the only like,
no,
hair
no, no,
horror
no,
story
no,
one.
No, they ask me like on my stories, like, have you ever done this or ever done that?
Okay.
Okay, so the one that sticks out in my head the most, and this was in my first salon, is when I thought I had my texturizing shears in my hand, and I had my regular shears in my hand. And I know you don't do hair, Eric, but when you go in with those texturizing shears, it's pretty like
I'm with you.
carefree. You know, you just go. And I was like, and once you do that, you just can't take it back, and it's like, oh my God. Oh my God. And it was on a woman, not a man. It's on a man, you can just cut it shorter and shorter and shorter. It was a woman. And I just, I couldn't crawl myself out of that one.
So what
did
you do?
And that was back.
Did you change the style of what where you were trying to go?
Well, that was back in the day when I didn't take responsibility for myself. So I'm sure I had some type of ridiculous excuse or a reason why it didn't, like, oh, I'm just going to blend it in a little bit more over here. You might have a little bit of a short spot, but like, I'm sure I did something like that. That is my worst one. I've had several, but that's the one that I can remember the most. I mean, I've had irate clients. I've had people cry. I've had people, I've fried somebody's hair up before, but that's the one for me that was like, oh, like I couldn't catch my breath.
Oh my
like,
God.
But here's another funny story that I'll share with you. And this was not me that did it, but people enjoy this. A client of mine, she was older. I don't even know if she's still living. She said, and her husband had these big chops, sideburns. A lot of people know those. Also. Big, yeah. Hairy sideburns. And they're what they call snowbirds. So if you live in Michigan, you go to Florida during the winter where it's warm. And they were down at the barber in Florida, and the barber asked her husband, hey, do you want to keep those sideburns? And he said, yeah. So he shaved them off and put them in his hand. And I've always loved that story because I, now, as risky as I am, I definitely don't have the balls to cut off someone's hair and put it in their hand and say, here you go.
Wow. Nah, that's fantastic. Do you have any hair horror stories related to one of your classes, like being on stage or anything?
Actually, I do, but it didn't happen to me. It happened to Victor.
Oh, I want to hear. About Victor behind his back.
No, this was bad. It was bad, though. It was okay. So because we travel, we have to makeshift everything. So he did these makeshift, like, trays. Like, any stylist that does hair knows what a tray is. Like, you put your products on. But these ones were homemade. So they're made from a tripod, and then you screw the top on, and it's got, like a base on it. Like, I always want to say, like, a lunch tray.
Okay.
Okay? And he was on the stage, and we covered the stage with, like, this plastic so that we don't get anything on it, because we had to pay for that. And I was on the stage, and my assistant was up there, and Victor was up there, and an assistant for him. And I had asked for a drink of water, and somebody brought me a drink of water, and I went to go sit on this tray, and as the tray buckled, like, it started to collapse.
Yeah.
And Victor tried to catch it as it was falling, but there was color on the tray, there was water, and so, and think of, like, garbage bag material.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so he's trying to catch this tray as it's getting saturated with stuff, and his feet just went from under him, and he fell so hard. I mean, it was like Fred, like, it's like each foot went, like, under each, the next, it was like slow motion, and it was like the last bam, and he just went down, and I'm like, I think everyone was in shock for a second, and I'm like, oh my God, are you okay? So then, like, I help him get up, and his shirt's, like, all wet from the water and the cup. But then I couldn't, but the funniest part of it, because it wasn't funny at all, is he immediately gets up, limp, and he starts doing the girl's hair again. And I'm like.
The consummate professional.
I said, Victor, I would have been so done. I'd have been like, somebody else, get, like, I'm done. And the thing is that we're usually filming the whole class. And it's funny because it was filmed right up into that moment. And then you saw the camera go down because everyone started rushing towards there to try to help. Because there was, now we have a mess on the stage. We have someone that fell. It was...
I love it. How many people in the audience?
Oh, man. Probably 50 or 60.
Jeez. That's pretty funny.
Enough. I don't care. If there would have been five, it would still have been, like, mortifying.
Yeah, it's more funny because I know Victor. If I didn't know Victor, I'd be like, oh, poor guy. All right, so...
Yeah, but the best part was when he got back up and started doing... I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, just roll with it. The show must go on, right?
Yeah. And he was like, he said something like, workman's comp, you guys saw it, I have witnesses, it's something
nice.
Crazy like that.
Nice. Any last words for the community?
No, I just hope for everybody for the same thing. I just want everybody to be confident behind the chair. I want everyone to have success. I think there's enough clients for everybody. You don't have to be competitive. You don't need to steal ideas and thoughts from other people. That's a big pet peeve of mine too. Is like, if someone has done something for you in your career or you learn, just give that credit. Like, it doesn't make you less of a stylist to say that. And I always say, and I talked about this extensively recently, and it seemed to be a big subject, is like, honesty is always going to be the best policy when it comes to doing hair. Even if you make a mistake on your client, fess up. Be honest with your owners too. I mean, it makes no sense for people to come to me and talk bad behind their owner's back when the person you need to be talking to is right there with you. Mm-hmm. So I just think like honesty is really, really difficult for people because they're afraid to hurt people's feelings or admit that something was wrong. But yeah, responsibility and honesty are the two things that I think I want for our industry.
Honesty is kind, right? Honesty for sure. Is kind. Lisa, it's been awesome. Everybody listening, Lisa Loves Balayage on Instagram. Not on TikTok yet, but she's gonna be on TikTok.
No, I have a TikTok.
Oh, you have a TikTok.
I do.
Oh.
I just don't remember my login, but I know
my name is Lisa Balayage.
Yeah, no one's gonna want to follow me though, because I don't have anything posted. But it's
do not follow Lisa on TikTok.
Or Snap. I have a Snap too, but I only use the filters for myself. And I have a Twitter too, but I don't know how to use that one either. So
Twitter's dumb.
Facebook. Okay, Facebook and Instagram are the best places to find me.
Are you Lisa Loves Balayage on Facebook?
No, Lisa Hart Walker.
Lisa Hart Walker. Is that H-E-A-R-T or H-A-R-T?
No, it's H-A-R-T. Can I give a little shameless plug really quick though?
Of course.
If you guys are looking for classes or need to know where to find them, you can always find them in the link in my bio or at www.balayagebc.com.
Okay, that's what I was going to say next. I was going to say balayagebc.com. And BC stands for boot camp, for those of you.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much, Lisa. It's been awesome. Appreciate the time.
No problem. Thank you.
Hey guys, I'm back. As always, if you like the Hair Game podcast, please reach out to me with any questions or comments on my Instagram, LoveEricTaylor, or the Hair Game podcast Instagram. And please screenshot us. Screenshot this episode and then share it on your stories so your hair loves can find us as well. I really, really appreciate that. That, by the way, is how podcasts live and die. Word of mouth, just like you guys. Next week's Pot of Loot will be a $150 Amazon gift card just in time for the holidays. We're trying to load you guys up on cash. Every Pot of Loot that we give away is an appreciation for the review that you've left us on the Apple Podcast app. If you want to throw your hat in the ring to win a Pot of Loot, then please write that review on the Apple Podcast app. The review has to include your exact Instagram handle. That's how we know who you are. Make sure you're following us on Instagram, The Hair Game Podcast, and Love Eric Taylor. And then I put your name in my bag. Each week, Donovan pulls a name, and I announce the winner at the beginning of every episode. You have to be listening to win, so you can DM me your mailing address or email address, whatever I need to send you your Pot of Loot. If you don't win, keep listening because your name stays in the bag in Donovan's office. You can win any week on any episode. For complete details, go to salonrepublic.com. Next week's episode will be with Lou from the Barber Society, LA. Until then, have a great week.